You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome back to the Bama Online Podcast. This one on a Monday afternoon, July the 5th, 2021. Travis Schreier alongside outstanding beat reporter for us, Charlie Potter. Of course, Charlie, a longtime member of the Alabama beat. And we just are coming off the holiday weekend. I know for a lot of folks, it's actually a day off on this Monday. Good for you if you find yourself in that situation. No time off for Charlie Potter and the rest of us, though, at BamaOnline.com. Between recruiting updates on Sunday, Antonio Kite, the composite four-star athlete from Anniston High School, committing to the Crimson Tide over the weekend, and then some things being finalized here in the last little bit with Jaden Shackelford, anticipated to be entering the transfer portal, the junior guard for the Alabama men's basketball team. That was apparently finalized on Monday. Charlie, of course, chasing that for us at BamaOnline.com. So, Charlie, I guess between all of that, I don't know if you had much time for hamburgers, hot dogs, apple pie, Major League Baseball, maybe even some fireworks. You've been busy, man.
Yeah, I mean, I always think about it outside of like Christmas and Thanksgiving, like just holidays. It doesn't really matter because news will break. And for Hank, I know especially you think about 4th of July. That's kind of a thing coaches like to do now, is tease some fireworks, and not the normal kind you'd see on 4th of July. But I was able to, you know, get out of town on Saturday. That seemed more apt because there's just more going on. More things are open. I went to hang out with some friends in Helena, and it's funny because, you know, you have the traditional things that you eat on 4th of July, and Helena has like a downtown kind of little festival. They have a bunch of vendors. I was told there were going to be a bunch of food trucks and things like that, and you know, they have a brewery, and they were going to have a fireworks show, but they only had one food truck, and the line was like, trying to get on Space Mountain at Disney World. So
you didn't have a fast pass for the food truck, Charlie?
I didn't. Aren't there any. Those don't exist right now because of the pandemic. So we did, you know, we had an American State, but we went to Waffle House after a few beers, so that's always fun. But no, it was a pretty tame 4th of July weekend. You know, saw some fireworks in Helena. You know, we heard fireworks all over Tuscaloosa, but I'm assuming you did some good grilling this weekend.
Oh, yes. I did some, you know, traditional stuff over the weekend, did some steaks, did some smoked chicken wings yesterday for a cookout, for a get-together that included some Boston butt, some ribs. Yeah, we were all American on the grill, man, over the weekend. No doubt about that. So it was a good weekend. What was the latest you heard a firework go off last night? Do you recall that?
Well, I always laugh because the people that were shooting them off close to my house, I could see through my front door, like the glass at the top. I could see it, you know, going off in the sky. But they were shooting off the same fireworks when it was still light outside. I was like, save it for later. If like, I don't want it to be super late. You know, we have a couple cats, and one of them is really skittish of thunder and things like that. But you know, I get it. It's 4th of July. People are going to do it. And I think it was, it might have been well after midnight. It wasn't quite, you know, 1-2 o'clock in the morning, but from the time the sun was still up until then, it was pretty consistent.
Yeah, I think it was a little after midnight that I heard the last pop, pop, pop. And that was about it. But I'm like you. It was, people weren't waiting for sundown. You know,
no.
It was 7 o'clock, even in the afternoon, they were starting to go. And so pretty consistent pyrotechnics on July the 4th. It is the first time we've gotten together, well, on this podcast anyway, in the month of July. And you know what that means, Charlie. SEC Media Days, just a few weeks away. And with all this name, image, and likeness stuff over the last week, I was thinking about it, and this is going to be the NIL SEC Media Days, it feels like. Maybe something. There's always, with the news cycle moving the rate that it does these days, there's always the potential for something else or some other things to sort of supersede that. But as it sits right now, is this just going to be the name, image, and likeness media days when everybody gets together in Hoover? Hopefully everybody gets together.
I think so. Yeah, I think it's going to be the hot topic, and I'm sure, you know, Nick Saban and I think they're going to bring two players per school. I don't know that for sure, but I think I have a good idea of the Alabama players that are going. I'm sure they're just going to be – that's going to be maybe 40% of the questions they get asked is about name, image, and likeness. Now, you know, I think that there's a good bet that a guy like John Metchie will be Alabama's offensive representative. So you're going to get some Jameson Williams, some Henry Toa, some things like that for the players and for Nick Saban. And he's going to get a variety of questions, you know, some good, some bad. That's just how it goes at SEC Media Days. But yeah, I have a feeling it's going to be kind of reminiscent of back when satellite camps were a thing, and that just dominated all of the questions up in Hoover. So I have a feeling it's going to have that kind of flavor. But, I mean, it's to be expected. It's new. There's been a lot to cover. Nothing just huge outside of, you know, Bryce Young signing with arguably the top agency in the country.
CAA, yeah, that's a monster.
But there hasn't been just a big deal signed by one of these players or agreed to or a partnership or anything like that. It's a lot of little things. And I think, you know, for Nick Saban, I think they probably, you know, trained them pretty well. It looks like they're doing a lot of stuff that to be expected, things like, you know, your, what is it? Yoke gaming, where you can, you know, people can pay to play video games with you. A lot of guys, that's how they spend their free time in their dorm room or apartments, playing video games. Guys are, you know, sharing stuff on Instagram and probably getting some merch, some gear out of it. That's to be expected. So nothing just completely off the wall yet, but I think it's only going to continue to be something that's discussed and talked about over the course of the summer. And with SEC Media Days only a couple weeks away, yeah, I think it's going to be something that is going to be a hot topic up in Hoover.
Yeah, name, image, and likeness, and probably some one-time transfer rule. Because you said it. Look at some of the additions just that Alabama has made to its roster, and as an extension of that, the SEC falling in line with the one-time transfer rule, paving the way for Henry Toa to join the Alabama Crimson Tide. But, yeah, you can kind of see those coming a couple of weeks away. So what about it, Charlie? You're one of these guys or gals, a student athlete, and you've got this opportunity now to add sponsorship to your resume. Which sort of area would be the one that you would covet the most? Would it be food? Would it be food and beverage? Would it be gaming? You know, certainly the bigger dollars, the better. But for the average guy or gal, what is the one area that you think you would want to fall in line with the most?
Yeah, I mean, like when this was being discussed, I thought about the, like this time of year, especially when the Olympics are on, you think about some of the commercials that you see out there. And the big ones are things like Gatorade, heck, even like Coke and McDonald's, a bunch of the apparel lines like Nike and stuff like that. That's probably you know, a little bit of a touchy subject for some of these schools. I'm sure Alabama doesn't want some of their guys going out and landing, you know, a deal with like Under Armour or something like that. But I thought, you know, if it were me, yes, I would love to be, you know, just raking in the dough, but you got to be careful in some of these situations because everybody's going to be wanting to do stuff and they can take advantage of you. So I think what I would want to do is, you know, find an apparel brand that was just, you know, hey, post this on Instagram, you know, once a week or something like that, and we'll just send you a bunch of free stuff. Like that would be one of the things that I would want to maybe take advantage of, whether it's, yeah, it could be, you know, clothes, it could be things like that. It could be, you know, you could do something like a sports drink, like a Gatorade or a Body Armor or something like that. And they just send you a case, you know, every few weeks or so. I would be more than happy with that. I mean, as a student with all of the, you know, get on board days and things like that, you know, me and my friends used to go and just rack up all the free t-shirts and cups and all that. I mean, just think about the stuff you could get just because you're a well-known athlete. I think that's the route I would want to go. Again, of course, I'd like to make some money, but I think you could maybe get in a little bit of trouble from that standpoint. So I think just getting as much free stuff for maybe an Instagram post or a tweet every now and then, that's a no-brainer for me.
Yeah, I would be looking to trade for like probably food and beverage. You know, if I played at Texas, I'd probably want to do a trade with Tito's Vodka or something. But I'm guessing that Steve Sarkisian and the Texas Athletic Department may not want those type of partnerships. Same with probably in Tuscaloosa. I'm guessing people at UA don't want you just straight up doing stuff with more bar related places if you could help that. But I'm a food guy, so I would probably try to have five that I'm trading with, just trades, you know, a text, a tweet here, you know, social media representation, and then free meals and drinks everywhere. And then I could also maybe have it at a level where I could take my teammates. That would probably be a pretty smart move. But yeah, that's probably where I would fall on all that. It's something I don't have to worry about, though, these days. So what we're going to do, Charlie, we're going to get into some more football talk. We're going to talk about the potential for Alabama offensively to have its first 3,000-yard rushing season since 2017. We are going to circle back to Jaden Shackelford later in the pod. We're going to give you our way too early starting fives for the Alabama men's basketball team in the 2021-2022 season. Did you have anything else, though, that you wanted to maybe cap the NIL scenarios with?
No, I mean, I've thought about this, and, you know, my wife and I have talked about it just in, you know, me keeping up with all these things on Instagram. I've had a tough time of maybe picking, like, a place in Tuscaloosa to, like, that would be the sponsor for you. It sounds like you're maybe more on track for that. So I was just wondering if you can only choose one place in Tuscaloosa.
See, I knew you were going to do this, Charlie. I knew you were going to go 60 minutes on me, you know, and put my feet to the fire. I've got my favorites, and I guess if I'm going to incorporate everything into meals, well, see, I got to say Peterbrook, man. If I don't say Peterbrook, I'm getting divorced. You know, if I don't say I'm going to partner with the wife on the chocolate, I'm in trouble immediately. But if she doesn't know, you know, what I'm kind of pairing up with, I tell you, it would be a place with exceptional food and beverage. And so, gosh, if I could do my lunch place, see how I'm doing this? If I could do my lunch place, I'm probably doing Southern Ale House. So I can go get my Yardbird chicken sandwich, and then I still have access to the everything else that goes with SAH. But at dinner, I'm probably going Chuck's, man, because I've become kind of this sushi freak in the last 3 or 4 years, and I've got the two stents in my arteries now to show for it. But I like the sushi. I like the other food just fine, but man, I love the sushi. And so I'd probably go Chuck's for dinner. If you had to pick one or two, you got a pick or two?
It's tough. Like I said, I've struggled with this just because I'm picky. Not in terms of just what I eat, but like just deciding on things. I will say that we went to Southern Ale House for the first time in a while, and that Yardbird sandwich is no joke. So it's, you know, it's out of the way. We kind of forget about it. We're never really, you know, on our way to Northport. So, that was a nice refresher. But for me, I don't know. Like, I really like, I guess lunch, even though we tend to wait until happy hour, like Avenue Pub's happy hour burger
is hard to beat.
One of the perfect meals in Tuscaloosa, because you don't leave feeling miserable, but you're able to eat a burger. And they got some nice beer selection. But then, you know, me, one of the things I could eat every day is tacos. And I'm not just a huge, you know, liquor drinker or anything like that, but I like a good margarita every now and then. And the place the wife and I like to go to pretty often is Taco Mama. I know it's not necessarily a traditional Tuscaloosa place. It's a bit of a chain, but I could get my money's worth for sure at a place like Taco Mama.
If Chuy's was still in Tuscaloosa, that would be the slam dunk. I know, right? Are you still grieving?
Yeah.
I think I have advanced to beyond anger and despair, but it's just solemn. Just a very solemnness, because I can't get that creamy jalapeno sauce anymore. You know what I'm talking about. I mean, that's the best restaurant chain sauce in America, in my opinion. You know, those folks, where they screwed up, they did the free happy hour food from like 4 to 7 in a college town, Charlie. You can't do that with college kids. They'll come in there and eat you out of business for free. You know, that nacho bar they had.
Exactly. I think their biggest mistake is just putting the queso out there, because, you know, we would go and be like, oh, the nacho bar's still open, but there's just nothing. It looks like a wasteland. Like, it's just been, you know, picked over at least probably 3 or 4 times before we got there. But yeah, that still a touchy subject. I do like Mexican food. I do like tacos. And
that might be the only choice in America that didn't make it.
Yeah.
I can't imagine any others not making it, Charlie.
Well, I don't know how often you go to the Summit, but you try to go to Chewy's.
Yeah.
You're going to have to wait at least 45 minutes. Yeah,
unless you can get a spot at the bar.
Right.
Yeah. No, I'm still dumbfounded by that situation. All right. Something that, you know, actual student athletes have an opportunity to do. We'll get into some of those coming up here. Charlie, let's talk about this Alabama offense in relation to its potential as a rushing offense in 2021. And I think that it's easy to sort of make the assumption that, well, with the turnover, even with Najee Harris moving on, but, you know, all the weapons on the outside that have moved on now, first year starting quarterback, an offensive line that looks like it's going to be built to get movement up front. You think about Alabama running the football, hasn't had a rushing season of 3,000 yards or more since 2017. Now, 2018, they had 2,976 yards in 15 games. So they were close in their top three backs. Alabama's top three backs that year all averaged 5.3 or more per carry. So where do we start with this? Is it stylistically you think this offense might be geared more that way? Do you think it's out of necessity? Is it a pairing to go with this defense that Alabama's going to have? Let's make a case for Alabama having that first 3,000-yard rushing season since 2017.
I think it's kind of all of the above of what you just said, because, you know, going back to the spring, even with losing Najee Harris, and I guess this is before Keelan Robinson entered the transfer portal, but I still think they feel this way about their running back position, is that it can be a strength this fall. Nick Saban said that, and he didn't really bat an eye. And, you know, you have Brian Robinson, you have Chase McClellan. It sounds like Trey Sanders is coming along well in his recovery. Roydell Williams is a young guy that I think has a lot of potential. And then you add Kamar Wheaton, the former five-star, to the mix. So that's 5 really talented backs. And with what they have to replace at the receiver position, I still think that's a question mark for this team. I think the running backs and the tight ends are going to be used quite a bit, and probably earlier on the season. I think, you know, some of the receivers will get more comfortable as it progresses, but I think they'll lean on the running game. Now, I do think, and you and I have talked about it before, that Bryce Young's going to have to come out the gate playing well and slinging the ball well, but he does have the luxury of a fifth-year senior at the running back position and some talented guys behind him. So I think it's possible. Now, you know, I know that we'll probably talk about the case against it. You look at just the last 10 years, and Alabama's only eclipsed 3,000 yards 3 times, and that's, of course, in, like you said, 2017, the season before, and in 2016, and then 2012, and that was the year that Eddie Lacy and T.J. Yeldon both went over 1,000 yards. And then they've come close a couple of times. Heck, the year that Derrick Henry won the Heisman, they were a yard short of 3,000. But it's tough. I think that's the example, is that even with all the talented running backs Alabama's had over just the last 10 years, it's tough to accomplish. So I think, like you said, stylistically, and maybe just what they're going to have to do from a personnel standpoint, maybe it leans in their favor, but it's going to be, you know, difficult, I think, to reach that mark just looking at history alone.
If you're making the assumption that, oh, this will be a 3,000-yard rushing offense in 2021, you're assuming too, aren't you, that there's going to be at least one 1,000-yard rusher in this offense? And if that is the way it plays out, are you convinced that it will be Brian Robinson that will be that 1,000-yard rusher? Can Brian Robinson give a performance, produce along the lines of, say, a Glenn Coffey back in 2008? Now, I don't think Alabama stylistically is going back to 2008. Right. That was bully ball, and it was very effective. Pound Glenn Coffey behind Andre Smith and that offensive line. And then you had a freshman at wide receiver by the name of Julio Jones that you could throw it around to when you wanted to or needed to. But is it Brian Robinson? Is it that easy of a choice for you, or is it one of these other backs?
Well, see, I don't think it'll be a situation like 2012 where you have a couple of 1,000-yard rushers. But you just look at 2016 and 2017, you know, Damian Harris had back-to-back 1,000-yard seasons. But in 2016, he had 1,037, so he was 37 yards over. In 2017, he had exactly 1,000. I think one thing to keep in mind when you talk about those two seasons is you have to add in Jalen Hurts to the mix because, yes, you had Bo Scarborough and Josh Jacobs, and then 2017, that was Najee Harris' freshman year. But Jalen was running the ball a lot. In 2017, he had almost 900 yards rushing. He had over that the year before. So I think Bryce Young can run. That's something Tua Tagovailoa said at his luau with Tua at Bryant Denny Stadium just last week. You know, he has the ability to run and make plays with his legs. But he's not Jalen Hurts. So I think
– And do you want to expose him to that much with your quarterback situation maybe the way it is?
Exactly. You're not going to have just a bunch of design runs, I think, for Bryce Young. I think you want to utilize it to an extent. But, yeah, you're going to want to hand it off to those running backs. But I think with, you know, how we laid it out with, you know, five talented backs, and I think if Trey Sanders is healthy, you have at least Brian, you have Jason, you have Trey – that can carry the load. I don't know that Brian Robinson is going to get over 1,000 yards. He hasn't had over 500 in his career, and he's played in damn near every game that he's suited up for Alabama. And then you look at the rest of the guys, they don't have over 200 yards. Now, of course, that's you take into account when they're used in games, but Brian Robinson's been the number two back the last 2 years, and he hasn't even eclipsed 500. Again, last year, Najee Harris saw the lion's share of the carries. And Brian Robinson's going to benefit from Najee not being here anymore. But those younger backs are going to start to eat some of those. So I don't think that Brian Robinson will have a 1,000-yard season. He does have the benefit of, you know, having a full schedule of 12 games and, you know, three non-conference games where, you know, he should be able to eat and those same guys behind him as well. But I don't know that Alabama would get a 1,000-yard rusher. And if it is, I don't know if it'll be Brian Robinson.
So when you talk about Bryce Young like we did and his impact on the run game, he took some sacks last year. That certainly impacted his negative rushing total in the time that he did see the field in 2020. But for sure, when you look at Bryce Young in comparison to Mac Jones, Tua, you know, you're talking about a guy that going back to Jalen, if he needs to, can make some things happen with his legs. Since Jalen, as you pointed out, rushed for 855 yards in 2017, the most rushing yards from a quarterback in a season, Tua in 2018 with 190 yards. And you got to factor number of games into all this too, because if Alabama plays 15 games again, 3,000 yards, even with my checkered public school math past history, that comes out to 200 yards per game. And I think this offense is capable of that too.
No, it is. It's just, I think that they're going to want to, you know, get Bryce Young comfortable with the passing game. They're going to want to get these new receivers comfortable. And then you got to factor in guys like Jaleel Billingsley and Cameron Latu. I think they're going to be a big part of this offense. And the same goes for the running backs just in the passing game. I do think that Bryce, though, we've seen him, I think, really late in the games last year, he stood in the pocket and tried to make things happen, which resulted in, you know, a few sacks. You know, this year in the spring, he has a black jersey on, so it's, you know, touch football with him. If he didn't have that jersey on, I think he makes a ton of plays with his legs in the spring game just because the defense is, you know, getting his face quite a bit. So he has that ability to extend plays, and I think he can have maybe a better rushing season than Tua had in 2018, and you got to think about it. I mean, probably Tua's longest run of the season was like run against LSU when he had that bum knee and outran everybody for a touchdown. So I think Bryce's ability to be mobile helps, but I still think that with him and, you know, his development and comfortability, they're going to want to try to do things in the passing game. I think they can get 200 yards a game. I don't think they'll get 200 yards on the ground every game, though.
And you consider opposing defenses in this and looking at some of these units from a year ago, and you get back to you're not in the Power Five competition exclusively scenario that you were in 2020. You look at Alabama's rushing yardage from 2020, 2,385 yards in 13 games, all against Power Five So you look at if that team, that offense had had 15 games instead of 13, it's not all that far-fetched to think, especially if you mix in some FCS action and some mid-major, you know, group of five type competition. They could have gotten there maybe a year ago, but opposing defenses, teams like Arkansas, Ole Miss really struggled against the run a year ago. Texas A&M, looking at this schedule, you expect A&M to be very good defensively. Aggies allowed just 92 rushing yards per game a year ago. Alabama rushed for 109 against A&M in Tuscaloosa last season. Now, you anticipate LSU, Mississippi State, Florida being solid against the run, but Alabama went for 265 in Baton Rouge last December, went for 208 against a scrappy, gritty, I guess you could say, Mississippi State defense. Florida gave up 170 last year on the ground per game. Auburn, you're looking at a defensive line that's turning over pretty heavily. And then again, you get into FCS Mercer, you get into New Mexico State and, you know, USM, those kind of games. You got to factor that too, I guess.
Now, those are the ones that I circle immediately, just because you're going to have big plays in those games from the offense. You're going to have a quick pass that goes to maybe Jameson Williams and he takes it to the house or someone like that. John Metchie can score, you know, in a long pass, and the offense is off the field, and that takes away opportunities for the running backs. But then, you know, Alabama's up, you know, 35-7 at halftime or something like that. And then in the second half, you start to see some of these younger backs, and Nick Saban likes to lean on them late in games when they have a big lead and just milk that clock. So I think those are the games that you can certainly make up some of this ground, just in terms of, you know, them falling short in the last couple years, especially last year, like you said, with only playing Power 5 competition. It'd be unbelievable to see some of the stats for a guy like Najee Harris or even Devontae Smith against a you know, an out of or non-power five non-conference opponent or an FCS opponent. So it's just, I don't know, like when you said 3,000 yards, I was immediately skeptical, just because, you know, looking at it, it's tough to do, and they don't have a back that's just been that bell cow. There's just a lot of uncertainty, I think, at the position, but it is a strength because they have so many talented and potentially, you know, significant contributors. It's just we haven't seen Jace McClone and Roydell Williams outside of garbage time last year. You know, we don't know what Trey Sanders' health is going to be, you know, in terms of what he's able to do this fall. And then Kamar Wheaton's just a completely unknown because he arrived, you know, this summer. You know, Brian Robinson, we've seen him. And again, I don't know if he's a guy that can get to 1,000 yards. And with Bryce Young, you know, he's going to have to consistently make plays with his legs. I think it's possible. But it's just looking at what's happened in the past, whenever Alabama is playing against a full slate of games with those non-conference games on there, you know, they've only been able to do it three times. And that's with, you know, players that have been Heisman Trophy winners, Heisman Trophy finalists. You have that mobile quarterback in Jalen Hurts. So I think there's a lot against them, but I agree with you. And just looking at the simple math, 200 yards per game isn't that far-fetched, especially whenever you add in some of these games that they're going to be playing this fall.
So are you sticking with the under here? Is that what I hear in the trepidation when we talk about going over from you, Charlie? You thinking it's going to be under by a little bit?
I do, and I think that's too, you know, what you talked about with like Glenn Coffey. The game has evolved. Alabama's not going to be 3 yards in a cloud of dust and just, you know, leaning on the running game exclusively. I do think that they're going to run the ball more. I think they're going to get the tight ends involved in the passing game because the receivers – you know, they're going to be new. They're going to be fresh. So is the quarterback. But I think that's, you know, that's what the game has evolved into, and they're going to try to push and to get as much as they can out of Bryce Young, get him comfortable in making plays. So I think that they're not going to force it, but I think they're going to want to see what they have out of Bryce Young and see what they can, you know, do from him early on. So I just think that they know what they have in the run game. You know, the offensive line, I think, will be fine when they get the right five on the field, but they're going to want to try to get that passing game going as much as possible. And that takes away a bit from the running game, even though I think that can be a strength and something that they choose to utilize this fall.
I'm going to go over by a tad. I don't think they're going to smash through 3,000 yards like they did in 2017 when they ran for 3509. But I do think, I think they exceed 3,000 by a little bit. And I'm going to go with Jace McClellan as my pick for the 1,000-yard rusher for Alabama. Maybe Brian Robinson is that guy, but going to go out there a little bit with maybe Jace. Although, you know, Jace in limited action last year averaged 10.7 per carry, so I don't know if you can exactly call him a sleeper. But so there you go. It's a lot of fun talking some Alabama run game with Charlie Potter here on a Monday edition of the Bama Online Podcast. And when we come back, we're going to shift gears. We're going to get into some round ball with this news, continued talk about Jaden Shackelford hitting the transfer portal. We'll do that with Charlie when the Bama Online Podcast returns right after this.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Back with more of the Bama Online Podcast. Travis Schreier and Charlie Potter with you. Hope you had a safe and joyous, enjoyable 4th of July. We're right back at it here on a Monday. And Charlie, you updated us on Monday afternoon that, in fact, Jaden Shackelford has entered the NCAA transfer portal. Word of this really started to pick up, I guess, light last week. Jeff Goodman of Stadium.com, I believe, first to at least put out there that that was the intention of Jaden Shackelford to enter the transfer portal. But, you know, still something very newsworthy on this Monday to consider, given his contributions to this team the last two seasons.
Yeah, I mean, it was, the eve of name, image, and likeness, whenever everybody was gearing up for that and expecting kind of an onslaught of news the next morning. There was a lot of Alabama basketball news the last day of June, and that was with, you know, Josh Primo electing to stay in the draft, which that was kind of we talked about that. That was the way that was trending. But, Jaden Shackelford choosing to enter the transfer portal, at least that was the word last week that he was going to do that, was a bit of a surprise. There had been a little bit of a rumbling about that, but you just always, when you hear a leading scorer choose to do that, are a little skeptical. And then you see the report, and then today he officially entered the portal. That means Alabama's going to be, with a brand new starting lineup this fall, because you have Primo and Herb Jones and John Petty. They're all guys that are going to be potentially drafted, later this month. And then Jordan Bruner exhausted his eligibility. And those are your five starters for the most part, most of last season. And they're all gone now. And, it opens up some opportunities for other guys, which is what we're going to talk about. But, with Shackelford, he's a guy that I think took on more of a leadership role in his sophomore season. Again, he's someone that led Alabama in points per game with a little over 14. He started 32 of 33 games this past season, and the only one he didn't start was senior night, which he gave away to guys that were going to be playing in their final game. And he's just a guy that touched the ball quite a bit. And I think Alabama, they can make up for it, but seeing how much they're losing this offseason, just from an experience and even a leadership standpoint, they're going to have some guys to step up for sure.
Yeah, you always, in situations like this, feel like you need to implement the caveat of he could come back. He could return to Alabama. But given this time frame, Charlie, I would think that doesn't seem likely for Jaden Shackelford.
No, the timing, yeah, that's exactly what I think. Just because, he enters the draft, he gets the feedback. He could have entered the transfer portal after the season, but he does it now whenever the deadline for guys to make a decision is, this week, I believe. I think the NCAA's deadline is the 7th, and, NBA rules call for a later withdrawal deadline, but the NCAA has its own set of rules that say you know, this deadline is 10 days after the combine. So the timing of it does suggest that he won't be coming back, but you're right. I mean, I always, when I post these stories about players in the transfer portal, I always make sure to mention, like, it's also worth noting they can withdraw their name from the portal at any time and choose to return. But that isn't really something we see happen very often. But yeah, I mean, I think with Shackelford, you know, maybe he's looking or he sees the writing on the wall and knows that Alabama has some guys that are going to be, you know, nipping at his heels for playing time, because you know, Jaden Shackelford saw a lot of that, you know, this past season. And so I think it's just a situation where he's ready for maybe a fresh start, maybe looking to go closer to home, you know, him being a guy from California. And yeah, I think that with him choosing to enter the portal, but also keep his name in the draft, I think that was the most surprising thing too, is just because if you're going to enter the portal, then just take your name out of the draft, because he's a guy that he's a smaller guard. We know that from NBA teams, they like those longer combo guards and things like that. So I think he's got the feedback he needs. I think he'll withdraw from the draft, and now he'll be looking to move on to another school.
So with that likely scenario, let's do our way too early starting fives for the Alabama men's basketball team for the 2021-2022 season. I guess Javon Quinterly, we're both going to have there on the basketball, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Quinterly's a guy, he came off the bench last season, but that was more, you know, he provided a spark and he accepted that role. But as the season progressed, I mean, he just played better and better. And, you know, he's a guy that I think with a strong season could be the latest Alabama player to hear their name called in the NBA draft. So, yeah, I mean, it was a no-brainer point guard that Quinterly would be there for me.
Maybe a dual point guard situation with J.D. Davison. Not all that difficult to envision that, I would think.
No, I mean, that's something that Nate Oates has talked about before. You know, just the fact that both of them can play together. You know, Quinterly, I believe, is a little bit of a shorter guard. I'm looking at the roster. Yeah, the Alabama lists him as 6'1", and they list J.D. Davison at 6'3", which that's the same size as Jaden Shackelford. And we saw, you know, them coexist a lot this past season. So that's not, you know, that far-fetched. And, you know, just hearing from Nate Oates, you know, over the summer, whether he's talked in radio interviews or, you know, done stuff with the Crimson Tide Sports Network, whatever, you know, he said JD's been as good or better than advertised. And we're talking about a top 10 player in the country, a five-star, a guy that anytime you see a video of him on social media, it's just, it blows your mind the explosive ability that he has. Yeah, I think that to hear that he's coming in and impressing them, because he can do more than just, you know, a highlight dunk. He can really pass, and that's something to have two guys that can, you know, handle the ball in the same offense could be a benefit for them. So yeah, I mean, when I jotted down several different lineups just to see what looked best on paper, and it was always JQ, JD, just because I think both of them can really coexist in this offense and really thrive.
So Keon Ellis, is he next up, or could it be Namari Burnett? Which way do you go with that that third spot?
See, I think with this is where Alabama has options, because we've seen Nato's in the past. You know, he's a guy that, you know, chooses to play a small lineup quite a bit. And if they wanted to, I think they could play Quinterly, Davison, Burnett, and Ellis all at the same time. And, you know, I think the early returns for a guy like Namari Burnett is that, you know,
Keon's a bigger guard than I think people realize too, Charlie, right? And he's not 6'2", 6'3". He's 6'5", 6'6", right?
Yeah, he's about the same size as Primo. And, you know, he's a guy, too, that, you know, a lot of teams play small. And with Burnett being a guy that seems to be coming on as a shooter, maybe you want that on the court. I did in the first one that I wrote down Ellis at the three. And I think, you know, he can play 2 through 4 and is a guy that is going to see his minutes really soar this season. But I think they have some position flexibility in what they want to do from a lineup standpoint, that they could have, you know, all four of those guys who are technically listed as guards on the court at the same time.
I went Keon Ellis at the three, and then at the four, I came with Jawan Gary. I went small ball, like you just talked about. Looking at the potential for starters, I don't know how you don't. What about that four spot? Are you going to stick with Namari as a three and Keon as a stretch four, or do you have something a little different in mind?
No, I had Ellis at the three, and then I wrote down Gary's name first at the four. And it is a smaller lineup because both Ellis and Gary are listed at 6'6", even though I think Gary's a little bit taller than that. But we saw him really start to thrive at the four when he played last season alongside guys like Jordan Bruner and Alex Reese. And I think that that veteran presence and him just, you know, being always around the ball and being aggressive is something that this coaching staff likes. So I think they, you know, you could look to go pretty big and have maybe a guy like Noah Gurley at the four and play someone like Charles Bediako or Alex Chiku at the five. But you don't know what, you know, Chiku has from a health standpoint. Bediako will be a true freshman, even though I think they feel good about him. So I went with the program veteran and Juwan Gary at the four, just like you.
So I guess we both went Noah Gurley at the five in this lineup.
Great minds think alike, Travis.
Damn, Charlie. I was looking for some conflict here.
Hey, I
got the exact same starting fives, Charlie. It's not good pod.
I will say. Let's look at this. I'll throw in a different one that I had. So I had Javon Quinterly, J.D. Davison, Namari Burnett, Noah Gurley, and Charles Bediako for one. And just because I think with replacing so many new starters, you maybe want that spark off the bench like you had from Quinterly last season. So you bring
and out Gary. Bediako. Gary, yeah. That's where I'm hesitant. And to have Gary in my five is I love what he brought off the bench.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, both of those guys, Ellis and Gary, are guys that later in the season, maybe when like a guy like John Petty was struggling or you had some guys that were dealing with some injuries, then they came in and played well. And Nate Oates was always praising them in his post-game Zoom calls just for what they bring to the table. So in that scenario, if you have JQ and JD in the starting lineup, you have Burnett there as a shooter, and you bring you go super big with Noah Gurley and maybe Bediako or Chiku, then you have those two guys also to provide that spark off the bench, which I think is something that's going to be very important because of the guys that they're losing. So playing devil's advocate here and just looking at the five or six I wrote down, that's one that is a little different. You could even put maybe I don't know if this would be the case, but you could put Burnett at the two and play Ellis at the three and bring J.D. Davison off the bench. I don't know if that's something that's going to happen throughout the season. I think he's going to see as much of the court as possible as a potential lottery guy. But they have, I think the crux of this is that even though they only have 12 available players, and I guess 11 without James Rojas, there are options in which you could put a starting five together, and all of them, I think, would be beneficial for Alabama.
I definitely like Namari Burnett as a rotational guy, and then Chiku and or Bediako to give you that size. You can come with 6'11", 7 foot with those two guys respectively. I guess if I worry about something looking at our fives, it's efficiency from 3-point range, because Alabama's going to shoot threes. That's what Alabama does. That's what Nate Oates wants them to do. JQ, though, 43% shooter last year. Keon, I think, better than most folks realize, 39%. But volume shooters, Shaq was a volume guy. John Petty, volume guy. Herb Jones took more threes last year. So, we have a smaller sample size to work with these guys as well in terms of can they do it efficiently with more shots in 2021, 2022.
I think that's why I tried to mention Burnett as much as possible, because Nate Oates was extremely complimentary of him coming in. I think he said, with them doing shooting drills this summer, he was breaking records left and right. And that's, having come off of years with John Petty in the program. So a guy like Burnett will certainly help with that. Jason Holt, even though I think he needs to add some weight, is someone that they've really hyped up as a shooter. And, Noah Gurley is someone coming from Furman that he's
that
the
Jordan
guy that
Bruner a little bit. Yeah.
He has some 3-point ability as well. And, if he's healthy, Alex Chiku's shown some ability to shoot from the perimeter. I don't know if that's going to be maybe a staple of his game. We haven't really seen anything from him because of his injury. But maybe he's a guy that offers that. Now, again, it doesn't come in the form of a volume shooter like you were talking. That's why I think Namari Burnett is going to be an important piece of the puzzle this season. And then that lineup I threw out there with him in place of Keon Ellis and bringing Ellis off the bench for that spark, you have your shooting on the floor. So, yeah, I think that's going to be maybe my biggest question with all of these guys leaving is, you know, what do you do from that standpoint? But they got guys that can, and I think they'll try to figure that out over the course of the season.
Well, Charlie, that's going to do it for a Monday edition of the Bama Online Podcast. Always appreciate you taking the time, my friend.
No problem, man. It's good to catch up and good to talk about some hypothetical NIL deals for us, because I don't think those are going to be coming down the pipe.
No. But, hey, look, get at your boys if you want to throw us something. You want to throw us some steaks, a little sushi? You know the move. Get in them DMs. We're down. We're absolutely down. We'll do it again soon. Thanks, Charlie.
All right, man. No problem.
For Charlie Potter, Travis Schreier, thanking you for joining us here on the Bama Online Podcast. If you haven't already, how about a subscription to the Bama Online Podcast? Simple as a click or two. Leave us a rating and a review while you're there. We would greatly appreciate that as well. And, of course, you can always catch us right there at BamaOnline.com. Come hang out with us on the Roundtable, the premium message board of choice for Alabama fans around the world. Right there at BOL. Until next time, so long, everybody.
It's the UEFA Champions League on Paramount Plus. Europe's top club soccer tournament. Champions versus champions. The best teams facing off in the knockout rounds.
Magnificent!
And it all takes place
while you're filling out financial reports at work. In the middle of your day, in the middle of your week. So use that second screen. Call in sick. Do whatever you gotta do to tune in Tuesdays and Wednesdays. Nobody watches the UEFA Champions League like us. Stream every match live exclusively on Paramount Plus.